Today's episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one website building platform with simple drag-and-drop tools to make the business building process easy. Get 10% off your first site with code PINEAPPLE.
Tune into Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service. Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hi there, you're listening to PINEAPPLE Radio on Full Service Radio, broadcasting from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Atara.
And I'm your other host, Ariel, and we're the founders of PINEAPPLE Collaborative, which is a community for women who love food. Our mission is to provide a platform for women to express their style, identity, and values through food. And we do that by hosting events in DC, New York, and San Francisco. We write a ton of fun digital content and send weekly newsletters, which you should totally sign up for. And we are very active on social media at PINEAPPLE Collaborative on Instagram. And last but not least, we have this podcast, which is where we love to dig into the issues that we're interested in, our community is interested in, and really showcasing the women we pine for.
Yeah. And speaking of pine for, that is our philosophy where we think about, admire, respect women and their movements and ideas and brands that they make. We have lots of those types of women in our network and lots of women that support us on a daily basis. One of those partners is Squarespace. Ariel, do you want to talk a little bit about how we're working with Squarespace this quarter?
Yeah, they are our all-around platform and conversation partner, both at events, in our digital content, and also on our podcasts. And what's really cool about our podcast segment with Squarespace's partnership is we're able to share some business advice that we've learned from women in our network about how to build a better business.
Yeah, and we've been with Squarespace since day one. We built our website on their platform way back in 2015, and our website has evolved just as much as our business has, which is really why it's really cool that we can share these pieces of advice that we've collected to make PINEAPPLE a better business.
So our better business advice for this week is all about gratitude. And so it's certainly a season of giving, and we feel, particularly grateful, during the holidays for so much of, what our community does and how they inspire us. But when it comes down to business advice, we have two key things to share. So last week, this is Ariel, I was attending the Young Farmers Conference at the Stone Barn Center for Food and Agriculture in Westchester, New York. And it was a fascinating three-day affair and learning from farmers, my age in their 20s and 30s. And, we're all entrepreneurs in a sense and creating like really multifaceted, challenging businesses. And so in all of them, and we were lucky to have Karen Washington, the founder of Rise and Root Farm, as well as, a food justice and social justice activist for her whole career. And, she shared so much incredible advice with us. So definitely read her writing where you can or see her speak in person. But one thing she said that really resonated with me personally is that, to three key components to being a farmer are, showing your gratitude, working in community, and giving back. So I don't think that's your average advice for a farmer. You'd think about like specific things with like the land and the soil and vegetables or cows, you name it. But gratitude, working in community, and giving back were, she said, three essential components.
Yeah, I mean, I think that really helps us in our business every day. And taking a step back, it's really easy to be overwhelmed by abundance. It's really easy to be stressed out when there are a lot of things on your to-do list. But I think Ariel and I really tried to recognize abundance as a privilege and something to be grateful for. It means that there's opportunities for us and that, managing the to-do list is something that like we can do very easily, but we, with gratitude, we can tackle it gracefully. And so with that, the second piece of advice that we have that Ariel and I have both tried to implement into our lives is simply rebranding your to-do list as a get to-do list, meaning these are all of the things that we are very grateful to be able to do, whether it's balancing our, end of year financials or having a conversation with one of our teammates or writing a report for our sponsors. These are things that we're grateful to be able to do that unlocks an incredible amount of potential in our business and ourselves.
So the TDL is now the GTDL for all of you out there who love acronyms.
Yes.
In any case, we are so grateful to have Aria McLaughlin in the house. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's such an honor to be here.
We are honored to have you, and we're particularly excited for this episode, which is all about soil. Calling it Soil for the Soul, because I think it is so important to our well-being as humans, humanity, and Earth. I know that sounds very meta, but I feel like hopefully at the end of this episode, you may also feel similarly.
Yeah, it's connected to all the things we love and care about at some level.
Exactly. So on that note, one of the ways we're going to open up, you know, why we're focusing on soil for this episode is we're going to open up with a quote from Wendell Berry, who is an incredible author and farmer based in Kentucky. Also, check out his writing if you haven't already. So this quote, he says, "The soil is the great connector of lives, the source and destination of all. Without proper care for it, we can have no life." So leaving you with that, and, at Pineapple, we're all about, loving food and caring about where it comes from, how it was grown, who planted or cared for or harvested the food before it got to our plates, and the broader implications of food in our society, whether it's climate change or immigration or justice, food is connected to it all. And really, like, at the root of it all is soil. And so that's why we're starting from the ground up. How many different kinds of puns can I throw in here today? And we're so excited to just, like, shed light on the importance of soil. And I think there's a lot of challenges in, throughout the country, throughout the world, when it comes to soil management and what we're going to do about it as eaters, as citizens, as business owners, as producers. So that's what we have in store.
Yeah. And then taking a step back, I want to introduce Aria and tell you a little bit about what she's been getting into. Aria McLaughlin is the co-founder of LandCorps USA, which is an organization advocating for soil health policies and programs that create value for farmers, businesses, and communities. LandCorps' first initiative, developing an outcomes-verified soil health program for the USDA NRCS, is currently under consideration for inclusion in the 2018 Farm Bill, which we'll talk about and is incredibly exciting. Until 2016, Aria served as communications director of a nonprofit organization promoting healthy soil. And in this role, she directed the launch of The Soil Story, which is a petition campaign that resulted in the passing of the California Healthy Soils Initiative. And previously, before that, Aria spent a decade working in business development, branding, and marketing, primarily on social impact campaigns. And as a PS, LandCorps' website is on Squarespace, so they're in great company with us, and it's an honor to have you here, Aria.
Thank you so much. That was great.
All right, great. So we're going to dive right into our interview, if you're ready.
Let's do it.
So for our first question, can you tell us a little bit about your journey to LandCorps and the world of soil in general?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, my background was originally in marketing and communications, and I was working increasingly to embed aspects of sustainability and social impact into the projects or the clients that I was working on. So I was already really interested in some big issues, but at some point in Los Angeles, I happened to hear a woman named Lauren Tucker, who's now the executive director of Kiss the Ground, an organization out there, and she was talking about soil in a living room full of folks. And there were so many incredible benefits of why she was obsessed with healthy soil that we'll get into in a little bit, but there were some ideas in there that just really put a light bulb over my head in terms of the problems that I had been thinking about and such a positive solution-oriented approach to thinking about those problems, which was soil. And so I told my Uber driver about it that night and haven't stopped talking about it since then. And through that work with Kiss the Ground and a really growing movement of organizations, that work took me to Paris for COP21, the Global Climate Summit, back in 2015, and just sort of increasingly acknowledging the importance of agriculture on the global stage of a variety of issues that we care about as both a huge problem that we're increasingly starting to hear about, but also a huge potential solution. And so with that recognition, which is wonderful, we also started to realize that there were some gaps in the movement. It's a movement that hasn't quite become an industry yet, and that really became the genesis for LandCorp as an initiative and now as a 501c3 organization to try and address some of those gaps and to advance soil health policies and programs more broadly.
Awesome. So what does your day-to-day look like with LandCorp?
It's a good, tough question. It varies a lot. I like to make sure that we are listening as much as possible. So we're on the phone or on the road meeting with farmers and farming organizations, with environmental groups, with policymakers. I spend about 15% of my time or so here in Washington, D.C., meeting with our elected representatives and really elevating the importance of soil health as an issue that we can all work towards. It's a wonderful, agriculture has typically been a bipartisan issue, and soil health in particular is something that really works for a lot of people, regardless of your background or the issues that you're most passionate about. So we're really trying to bring folks together and then identifying those programs and those policy opportunities that as many people as possible can support.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So tell us about why soil is so important, you know, from that first day when you heard Lauren Tucker speak about soil to, you know, as you've been years now working in this area, like why is soil so important and particularly in the conversation of food?
Absolutely. Well, it really is fundamental. It's incredible because it is connected to and benefiting so many issues. So healthy soil improves water quality. It improves the amount of water that you can hold in the soil, which directly then connects to our resilience to super important issues like flood and drought and fire. Where I'm from in California, that's obviously a huge issue. It's also really connected to biodiversity. So what we've seen is that when we grow and improve the health of the soil, we're also increasing the amount of biodiversity, both below ground, but also above ground. So not just things like earthworms and bugs, but also wildlife and hawks and mountain lions, I should say, and all sorts of things. So it really is an incredible issue where I think we have thought about agriculture as, we often conjure to mind images of monocropped corn and single rows of a single crop, but actually healthy soil is connected to this incredible diversity, which we also like to see, I think, in our food and in our people. And then I guess another point that I wanted to raise as it relates to our food, I was having brunch at a notable spot that I'll remain nameless in Brooklyn this weekend, and kind of being the walking Portlandia episode that I am, I asked about the bone broth and how that was raised and what they could tell me about it. And over the course of three separate people coming to my table to talk to me about, you know, how it was butchered and the quality and all of these different issues, there was this real disconnection to how that animal was raised and whether or not it was improving or degrading the quality of the land. So even though they had some details about the sourcing, they really were quite disconnected from that piece. And I think that for us, that's such an opportunity to return to how it was grown, where it was made in all things, but particularly with our food, with the stuff that we put in our bodies. Mm-hmm. And to ask those questions.
Yeah, totally. Never, you know, be afraid to be the Portlandia episode when you're at a restaurant. Obviously, kind of kind and curious. But I think sparking conversation when you're sitting at a table, you know, with a business you're patroning is one place to start. But we'll get into that later. One thing that you mentioned about, you know, thinking about where our food is coming from. So with meat, it's like a bit easier to understand, you know, their soil practices with terms like grass-fed or finished, because I think, you know, if you dig into it, that implies they're thinking about the soil. But are there other sort of keywords or terms to look for?
Yeah, absolutely. And the labeling, you know, what's available on a package is still coming, but conversations that you can have with your restaurants and your farmers markets and beyond, and even companies as you start to write letters to them and ask them good questions, are the sort of set of regenerative practices. So making sure that they are, do they know anything about the soil? Are they keeping the soil covered rather than leaving it bare? Are they applying cover crops so that you're adding crops that aren't necessarily harvested to serve to us on our plates, but that return nutrition and life back into the soil? A diversity of crops and animals, as I mentioned before, and then the addition of animals. You know, I think we have, just as we've done sort of with our national parks, but also with our agriculture, we've kind of taken the humans and put them in one corner and the animals in another corner and the plants in another corner again, and it's really separated out the parts of the system. So regenerative practices that add animals and that natural fertility back onto the land are things that you can look for and think about.
Mm. Right. And I heard you mention the soil health quality label, which is really interesting and exciting. Is there a danger there that it might be greenwashed and seen as kind of like a silver bullet when we should be thinking about the system?
It's a good and tough question. I think there's always a little bit of that risk, and part of the reason why we rely on labels so much is because we've lost that connection to our farmers and to our food. So it's right. Become a bit of a substitute for that relationship. And certainly words like natural are problematic. That said, that they're, you know, organic, USDA organic is still a great foundation. And then new and upcoming labels like the Savory Institute has an ecological outcomes verified, which is just now on an EPIC provision, one of their meat bars, which is exciting. And they'll be expanding out. So there are things that are coming down the pipeline to watch. General Mills and other companies are really starting to center this conversation. But at the moment, we're still a little bit in that one-to-one relationship, asking those questions of our brands and our products and our farmers.
Right.
So you mentioned the term regenerative agriculture. Can you touch on what that means and what that looks like?
Sure. Well, I should say, at least to start to acknowledge that at the heart of it, all of these practices are quite ancient. You know, this is mm-hmm. a really old form of knowledge that Indigenous folks have practiced for a long time, and that even within sort of our more recent American history, farmers have, in one way or another, through agroecology or sustainable agriculture or other things, understood the spirit of what we're talking about. But I think particularly with regenerative and in the context of 2018, we are talking about building up healthy soil rather than, you know, losing it to erosion. Right now we have about 60 years of harvest left in this country and around the world due to that rapid rate of erosion. Mm. So regenerative agriculture really refers to the ability to restore and rebuild and regenerate topsoil, and then, as I mentioned, all of the life that goes with it, such that we are improving landscapes, improving the nutrition and the quality of the food, mm-hmm. And other benefits that we'll touch on, like storing carbon in the soil.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Awesome. And so what are some examples of how growing different types of food can actually enhance and improve our soil quality?
Sure. The example that comes immediately to mind is at Stone Barns, where in the past season or so, they have started to add ducks onto the land as a different kind of animal to graze. And what they have noticed in the months since those ducks have been from pasture to pasture is that when the sheep, sort of the next set of animals in that rotational grazing, have followed on that piece of land, the sheep are first going to the places where the ducks ate. And so it's this really wild indication that because sheep and also cows don't just sort of haphazardly stomp around, they're very quite selective in the plants that they eat. And so the area where the ducks were was sort of this clear indication that that had been improved. And I think then we could also taste it for ourselves in our human bellies that that land had yielded both grains and animal products that were just incredibly nutritious and delicious.
Cool.
I want to get to the incredibly delicious and nutritious question in just a moment, but to build on some other examples that I think perhaps the pineapple community can begin to look out for. We've talked a lot about at Pineapple about heritage grains and things like buckwheat or sorghum, others, millet. And a lot of these are actually cover crops. And so part of, what makes them, I think, interesting from pineapple's perspective is that not only do they have a really incredible flavor profile, many of them are seeds saved from centuries ago or decades ago, I should say, but they play a very specific role in terms of improving soil health on the farms on which they, are cultivated.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, Ariel and I both studied environmental science, and obviously both of you are fellows at Stone Barn. So for our audience that might not know this term, can you explain what a cover crop is and why it's important in agriculture?
Sure. So again, kind of in the context of a field that is just a row of corn, for example, that's that kind of monoculture that we sort of understand. And so in order to move away from that, where you're not just kind of harvesting and extracting a single crop, you also need to add in additional crops, and we call them cover crops rather than cash crops, because as I mentioned before, they're not necessarily being immediately harvested in huge quantities for human food, but that they have the benefit of adding different nutrients and different minerals back into the soil, and also could treat different things like if you see a thistle, that might be a sign of compaction, and so adding different plants like clover and rye and sorghum and so on can address some of those different issues and make sure that you're building up the soil organic matter on your land.
Mm-hmm. And it also helps with some environmental challenges, right? Like wind or water and kind of eroding the topsoil.
Yeah, exactly. It's also really important so that you are keeping living roots in the soil year round. We've become very accustomed to seeing bare ground as what agriculture looks like. And in fact, that's absolutely not the best way to do it. And so there's a little bit of reprogramming and reimagining that slightly untidy fields and rows that are full of diversity is actually what we want to see, so that you're holding those roots in the ground, you're not losing topsoil due to erosion from wind, as you mentioned, that you're keeping more water in the ground. Right. It's absolutely crucial for all of those functions.
Mm. So multifaceted. And you're talking sort of about permaculture, and appreciate you highlighting the fact that, this is not new science. Indigenous communities, many of the Africans who were brought to America forcefully, part of why they were brought here was because of their agricultural knowledge. And, it was from slavery days up through, modern history with like George Washington Carver, I think I'm getting his name right. I mean, of, communities of color who have contributed so much to this agricultural knowledge that, we're now, I think, recognizing does so much, not only for the soil and, the health of our land and our communities, but making food nutritious and delicious.
Absolutely.
And I think for me, as someone who loves food as well as cares about the earth, but who loves food, this idea that food has more nutritional quality and the flavor can be enhanced so much more when it comes from healthy soils. So can you touch on this link and what we should know about?
Sure. Well, I think the number one thing to know is that soil is alive. We often talk about the fact that a single handful or a teaspoon of soil has more microorganisms than all of the people on the planet. There was also an article that came out in The Guardian just a couple of days ago that talked about the many miles deep subterranean life and the fact that there's just like billions and billions of tons of microorganisms. So there's so much to discover. You know, we're sort of jetting off to Mars, but in fact there's a lot to learn and discover right here. But as that relates to our food and our nutrition, that's incredibly important because those microbes are facilitating a relationship with the plants. So they're exchanging the carbon. It's a little scientific, but the plants are drawing down carbon and pushing that down into the soil. And in exchange for that carbon, microbes are helping to draw up more minerals and nutrients from the soil. And without that, or if you're just relying on a synthetic fertilizer, the plants get a little bit lazy and don't draw up as much of that nutrition. So thinking about boosting the life in the soil, boosting that soil organic matter is directly drawing up more nutrition in the plant, which then improves our overall health. And then, of course, there's the whole world of the microbiome for humans and the fact that our gut health is such a big part of our overall health. And that's a really burgeoning field of science that we'll start to see more about in the next 5 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's super interesting. And I think, you know, the connection of, you know, Blue Hill, the restaurant, with Stone Barns, the farm and center for agriculture, really gets at this interplay of that, like, soil exchange, which you were talking about, which is like, you know, how do you like farm for almost like better food that we eat and enjoy, as well as that contributes to the land. And so on the flavor piece, are there any like fun facts or tidbits that you can share?
Yeah, so I would just add to what you were saying there that we have been so used to kind of demanding the food that we want to eat. And in fact, Blue Hill is really starting to think about, well, we should determine what we want to eat based on what the soil and the land needs. So as they're thinking about like, oh, we should add a sorghum, we should add a rye, that will really help with the health of the land. And then that'll be the kind of bread that you'll see on your plate in 3 to 6 months' time. And it's really exciting.
Mm-hmm. It's a really different way to look at our food system. But, you know, it's really what the land demands and what we can all do to make a better environment.
Absolutely. And it might be the quantity as well as the
right.
the types of food as well. So a little less meat, a little more of those grains and legumes and veggies that we love.
Yeah. And we heard you mention the sequestration of carbon and how that is a huge service that soil provides. I think a lot of us, you know, I hope a lot of us have been paying attention to the IPCC report and feeling very worried about the future of our planet. So can you talk a little bit about the role of soil and climate change?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically where we're at now with climate change is that even if we switch to 100% renewable energy tomorrow, we still have too many greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. And so what that means is that some of that needs to be drawn back down. The oceans can't take up too much more of it. The atmosphere is clearly overloaded. And so the place where it is both not only needed, but actually a deficit is in the land and in the soil. So soil is essentially a sink for carbon. And as we sort of all learned back in the day in school through photosynthesis, not only do plants breathe in and draw down carbon dioxide, but they then turn that carbon into a really stable, rich form, which can be safely stored in the soil. So it's just incredible technology, if you will, and a flip in I think the typical narrative of climate change, that, you know, that we can really do something to reverse one of the most serious problems that we're facing, and that our actions aren't just about like breathe less oxygen and do less harm, but really that our food and our clothing choices can reverse that problem and do more good, like build up more life in the soil.
Right. And when you're comparing like a healthy soil to a completely denuded soil, the school of thought is that the healthy soil absorbs more carbon, yeah, right?
It is full of carbon. It has the capacity to draw down more storm or water. And then if you think about like dirt or dust, that's almost completely free of carbon and carbon-based life forms that create that those nutrients in that life.
So that's really what you're advocating for, you know, on the Hill and through LandCorps is you're trying to make soil health a priority in terms of, you know, how we think about agriculture in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. Although it is important to note that for many folks, you know, climate change isn't the motivating factor. And I think particularly when we look in America at a lot of the communities that are still doing farming, they can often be more conservative. And so focusing on issues of, again, topsoil erosion, of risk mitigation, of being more resilient in the face of sort of drought and floods, and just economic prosperity. The fact that you mm-hmm. are, if you are diversifying the plants in your field, you're also diversifying your risk and improving your bottom line, which is a huge issue for our farming communities. So there are lots of ways to think about it, and we try to bring that kind of wide-ranging perspective to the Hill.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not an easy thing to do, but I think that's like what we need to rally everyone behind this issue.
And, you know, speaking of the Hill and the Farm Bill, can we touch on quickly what this year's Farm Bill is shaping up to be, and specifically with regard to soil health?
Yeah, of course. So the Farm Bill, for those who don't know, is the big piece of legislation in this country that governs most of food and agriculture. It's a big omnibus package that happens every 5 years or is supposed to happen every 5 years. In addition to issues like nutrition and food stamps, which occupy a huge piece of the Farm Bill, there's also a conservation title. And that's where a lot of the soil health on working lands, if you will, takes place, is in that conservation title. We're excited that if you've been following any of the debates, we just got a Farm Bill language today.
It's good timing.
It's incredible timing. Yeah. Very well planned.
The country.
Yes. So the Farm Bill that has been released that is most likely going to be signed into law, I think this week, is much closer to the Senate's version of the bill, which again is a more bipartisan, kind of reasonable bill, which we're all very excited and appreciative of. There is a $15 million a year package of mandatory spending for soil health demonstration pilot projects, specifically to focus on different areas in the country and different types of production. So that's incredible, as well as an overall bolstering of some of the existing conservation programs that happen within the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Mm-hmm. Super cool. So we, you know, for this episode, I've just talked about a lot of big issues and how soil connects to so many different parts of our lives and our country and the issues we care about. So for people who are new to soil, like, can you just give us sort of the highlights for, like, what should we know about soil that we can take into our daily lives? Maybe like the three things. And our follow-up question is all about actions. So maybe it's just like what to know about soil for this question.
Sure. Well, I think we've touched on some of it, but certainly that it's alive, that it's full of really beneficial microscopic life that is kind of making our food and ourselves healthier is a big one. That healthy soil, number two, holds more water, is such a crucial issue. You know, to get geeky, a 1% increase in soil organic matter represents 20 times the ability to hold water. So we're talking about thousands of tons of water on a farm, which is just absolutely incredible. So it becomes less about how much rain we get and how much water we can hold, which is a wonderful flip on an issue of that is otherwise kind of driven by a narrative of scarcity. And then as we've mentioned, the nutrition and nutrient life in plants because of healthy soil is absolutely wonderful to take into your daily life. And I think we're heading to what we can ask our farmers about. So I'll pause there.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I think that'll be a really helpful place for people to start on their journey of learning more about soil. And on that note, Ariel mentioned this, but we always try to ask our guests about actions that they can take into their own lives on this subject. So if you're not already a farmer or a policymaker who's engaged in this work, what are some things that our community of eaters, entrepreneurs, women who love food, can take to advocate for healthier soils and ultimately make a better food system.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would start by saying I think we all need to expand our definition of who does what job in society. I think especially for those of us who live in cities, there's sort of a like, oh, that's nice, but I don't live in a place where I can compost. I don't live in a place where I can grow my own food. So this issue isn't about me. So I would definitely encourage all of us to expand that idea. Certainly we can be composting at home, you know, throw those scraps into the freezer and then find a community-based center or a garden who will take those scraps for you. That's a huge thing we can be doing to divert food from landfill and return that to make more healthy soil is something you can directly contribute to. Certainly to engage with your farmers at your farmer's market and with the people serving your food at restaurants. Really ask those questions. You know, even if I'm not getting a meat-based dish, I'll still ask folks about how the meat was raised just so that they know that I'm interested in the soil and in the environment, that it isn't just a humane issue or an ethical issue, but really a direct connection. So we really try to ask those questions. And then I would be remiss if I didn't mention policy and the fact that that is a crucial part of our democracy and something that we can all be a part of. So whether you are a part of an organization or a business, I would really encourage folks to think about how you can start lending your name in support of specific policies. You know, find the organizations like the National Young Farmers Coalition or LandCorp or National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition and sign on to the different policies that they're putting forward. And of course, call your representatives not just against things that you don't like, but also in support of the good bills that are there. Just because something is in legislation now doesn't mean it will be around forever or funded forever. So really affirming your support for different policies as well as voting when it's election time is something that we all can and should do.
I think that's a good point that people forget is to, you know, affirming that you support initiatives that exist is just as important because it ensures the longevity of a legislation.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, diverting food from landfill to compost, you know, there's ways to do it kind of for free. There are services that you can hire. You know, think about if you live in an apartment building and asking, you know, the management company to do something about it. With regard to, you know, engaging with farmers and folks at restaurants or grocery stores, wherever you buy food, you know, if you've listened to our podcast in the past when we've talked about natural wine, you know, it can be very intimidating to, you know, ask the sommelier about, like, do you have natural wines? Because you may get a lot of weird reactions or even negative reactions. But, you know your power, and you asking questions, you know, goes such a long way. And so whether it's voting or, you know, your dollars, putting your voice behind something, like, you know, feel confident in asking. And again, you know, that's something that we really, really prize at Pineapple.
Yeah, those questions, you know, it's not an interrogation, but it shows that there's demand for the type of, you know, healthy product that you want to see in restaurants. And it also holds people accountable for the types of produce and products that they buy. So it's really important, even if it might be uncomfortable.
And to the last point of policy, I mean, how can we support LandCorp? Where can we find you online or in real life?
Absolutely. Well, you can visit our website, which is landcorpusa.com, again on Squarespace, which is wonderful. You can shoot me an email at aria@landcorpusa.com. We're still kind of getting our social presence up to speed there. So for now, directly kind of reaching out and letting us know that as a farmer or a food brand that you'd like to be involved in soil health policy moving forward, definitely reach out and let me know. We can get folks onboarded pretty quickly, which is great.
Awesome. And you can also donate to the cause on your website.
That's right.
Which, you know, goes towards all the advocacy work that you're doing.
Yeah, thank you for that.
And last but not least, to follow more about, you know, on Aria's journey, it's at Aria Intrepid on Instagram, which you should definitely check out. You know, she's in the halls of Congress and, you know, farms across the country. And so it's a fascinating journey to follow when you don't yourself have the opportunity to do that per se.
Thank you. Yeah, it's true. It's an incredible and privileged perspective to be able to see farms on the East Coast and the West Coast and to have that access to DC, which we all do. But, you know, we've made it a priority and part of our time to go and have those conversations with elected representatives, which not everyone has. So, again, if you're not able to directly do that policy work yourself, then supporting organizations who do is a super important thing to do in this moment.
100%. Well, you've given us so much incredible soil for the soul, food for thought. And I hope this is just the beginning of how we address soil at Pineapple, and are super excited for LandCorp. And we're on board.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate everything you're doing to shift that conversation around food and all of that. It's incredible.
And thanks for Stone Barns for bringing us together on this journey.
Very grateful.
You know, they have an exchange fellowship, shameless plug, they have an exchange fellowship that Aria and I were part of this year in 2018, and their applications are opening up in 2019. So women who work at the intersection of climate change and agriculture, definitely encourage you to apply. And on that note, we're going to wrap up our episode. We are just like teeming with ideas now, but we wanted to ask you if you have thoughts on this episode. Feel free to share them with us at Pineapple Collaborative on Instagram. You can send us a DM or an email, hello@pineapplecollaborative.com. And, you know, please check out, you know, our website. We'll have the radio show posted there and you can share that link. And, you know, on that note, thanks again to Squarespace for, you know, making this show, this episode possible. And if you are also inclined to start a website for a movement you're building, a company you're starting, or just to put creative energy out there, you know, head to squarespace.com and you can use the code PINEAPPLE for 10% off, which is really fun. So thanks again and see you next episode.
Thanks so much.